This episode of the We Are Birmingham podcast is sponsored by footygreets.com.
Hi, it's Paul Devlin here.
Hiya, Jeff Horsfield here.
This is Neil Danz.
Rowan Vine here.
Birthday, wedding, anniversary, or any occasion. Personalised video messages from your favourite footballers. footygreets.com.
Hello and welcome to the We Are Birmingham podcast. I'm Chris Golding.
I'm Matthew Elliott.
Slight improvement at the weekend. To be fair, and I said this on Twitter as well, the 45 minutes against Norwich was probably the best that I've seen us probably since lockdown. I don't think I'm over-egging it.
Arguably, yeah, the first 45 minutes. I thought actually we were pretty decent for most of that game. I think we were at least in the game for the majority of it. But it was a really positive move forward. I mean, we'll sure we'll get into it a bit more later, but you know, if we play like that first 40, maybe just go to the first 60 minutes against everyone else we're up against for the rest of the season, we will pick up more points than we won't. Yeah. I'm pretty confident about that. That's what I took from it, despite the fact that 3-1 scoreline looks pretty horrible. I actually think there's enough positives to take out of that to suggest that, you know, on another day, we would have been playing a lesser team and come away with 3 points. And I think we'll see that happen. I'm hopeful we'll see that happen a few more times before the end of the season. They need to keep up that intensity. It's very difficult to keep that up intensity for 90 minutes, but they need to keep up that intensity for a good 60, 70 minutes across all the games we play now. I think that formation is probably we look the most comfortable. We spoke about that like last week, I think.
Before we get into it too much, let's listen to some of the listeners' 15-second opinions and see what they thought.
Let's do it.
15-second opinion.
Hi guys, I thought Karanka got his sub spot on. Bringing on San Jose and Roberts, obviously bogged the game down, make it scrappy. Don't play into Sheffield Wednesday's hands. And I think it worked. We, other than one chance aside, we weren't really troubled. And I think we had the better chances even after making the subs.
Hi guys, Oliver Newman here. Scotty Hogan loves the goal. Can't wait to sing that to him at St Andrews. Absolutely fantastic win. Get in, keep right on.
Huge result that could be in our season. Fair play to the players today. Turned up, put the effort in and got the job done. I mean, we controlled the game fully. It's a shame the manager tried to ruin it again with such negative and just baffling tactics with the five at the back against 10 men. But fair play to the players. They've got the job done and let's hope we can build on that now.
Massive win today. Massive 3 points. And ultimately, right now, I think that is the thing that matters the most. Slightly papering and over the cracks, but we need to build on this.
Is what I'm talking about, Blues. What a performance that is. We need to keep on the pressure, get a point against Norwich and push for 3 points against QPR and Huddersfield. And maybe, just maybe, we'll stay in the Championship. Keep right on, up the Blues.
So, first time in weeks, I didn't actually watch the game. I thought, right, I'm not going to put myself through this. I'm going to go to the opticians, get an eye test. So, maybe that's the thing to do going forward. Oh, keep right on. Relieved.
I was climbing a mountain in New York State in the USA when I saw the news over my Twitter feed, and it made my day. I'm so happy that the Blues got the win. Hopefully they can build on this and move out of the bottom three and continue to win this hot streak. It's great.
San Jose is about as much fucking use as tits on a fucking fish. How he gets in the team, I don't know. Just pipe it over the cracks. We are going down.
Was always a free hit tonight. Good first half, good goal, good save from the penalty. But Jesus Christ, stop bringing San Jose on. He's absolutely dog shit. The substitutions kill the game. Who brings on a centre-back for a fucking winger?
Why is Halilovic, Lecco and McCree on the bench? What is the point in even paying them a wage if when you're 2-1 down at home, you're not going to bring them on and instead you bring on centre halves and fuck with the formation. Fuck's sake.
First half performance deserved more. It ain't San Jose's fault we lost. The game was already gone at that stage. Why aren't we talking about Gary Gardner and him bottling out of a chance 2 yards from goal and giving away an easy pass to Sanchez, which led to their goal? It's a joke. I think he's awful as well.
Decent in the first half. Probably a little bit unlucky to have conceded. Second half, I was positive that we were going to go on and do something. Absolutely awful, awful substitutions. Subbing off your wingers and bringing on defenders and having San Jose in the team. Really disappointed. He's got to go.
First half, outstanding. Best we've played all season. Credit to Karanka for getting a settled side and a settled formation. Shouldn't have taken him this long, though, should it? Also, we've got no quality whatsoever on the bench. Those subs are League Two standard.
So a lot of the talk seems to be that substitutions, a little bit of praise in there. And I don't wholly agree with the no quality on the bench. I think when you've got Halilovic, hi Dan, and I mean, McGree did all right earlier in the season. I wouldn't be, but for me, I think against Norwich, the first change should have probably been a positive one, rather than San Jose dropping into that role where you're taking the legs off of Harper and bringing San Jose on for someone much slower. Instead of doing that, you bring McGree on, drop Sunich back there, you've got the same energy, and you're keeping the same sort of system when it wasn't really broken. I don't see the thinking behind it.
See, this is where I kind of disagree. I think people will want to, Michael San Jose is the new scapegoat for a lot of fans, for fair reason, for the most part. The Harper was obviously like blown out of his backside at that point. I take it we're starting on Norwich and going back to do Sheffield Wednesday.
Either way, mate. Yeah.
So we're doing it now anyway. So Harper waned a lot in that game. I can understand that because he hasn't played a lot of football.
And the system that they're playing, where they're high press, is always going to use a lot of energy.
Exactly. Now, for me, bringing on San Jose and popping him there wasn't that much of a problem. I didn't see too much of an issue with it. I know what you're saying about maybe bringing McGree on, putting him as sort of pressing next to Gardner and then dropping Sunich back. But then you're making, and maybe it shouldn't make too much of an issue, but then you're making two changes essentially for the price of one, if that makes sense. So I think with the way we were playing, the balance of the game, you know, we still looked pretty effective. Now,
I was just going to say that change with San Jose, though, when he brought him on, we were starting deeper. Now, straight away, they've got a chance on the edge of our box where we're sitting right on the edge of the box. And for most of the game, we hadn't been there. So we've just naturally dropped deeper with putting him on the pitch.
Yeah, I'm not even sure that is the case. I mean, I'd have to go back and watch again, and I don't really want to, and I haven't got the time. But I think one of the guys that left a message touched on it, like Gardner giving the ball away. I think Valerie just didn't track a man as well.
Saying that Gardner missed the sitter, by the way, it was a good opportunity, but I thought that came to him very late.
There was two of those. There was one in there. There was one against Sheffield Wednesday as well, wasn't there? Where he probably should have done better. The important thing is he's getting in those positions, which will go back to Gardner, because I thought he was pretty immense midweek anyway. Yes, he made a mistake. Again, so Valerie was sort of caught in no man's land, and then they've created an opportunity through what we'll call an unlucky deflection off of Dean. But then when you've got someone like Pookie to gobble up those chances, that's a massive difference. Now, Scott Hogan has been doing a really good job for us lately. probably should have scored midweek as well.
Very good chance, really, for him.
When you've got someone like that at the other end that, you know, just doesn't really... Okay, Pookie missed a penalty, but, you know, you give him that sort of chance, 9 out of 10 times, he's probably going to score it. So So I don't really want to get the issues for me. The substitutions for me in that Norwich game were the latter two. You know, when when you're bringing on Mark Roberts and you're putting Duke up front and just thinking like
Valerie in midfield.
Yeah, I mean, that was just so weird. I can understand bringing value on for Sanchez. Sanchez looked like he'd picked up a knock in the first half. He probably shouldn't have come out second half, but I can understand him wanting to come out, and obviously Karanka wanted to put him out there because...
He didn't look pleased, you know, when he came out just after half time. Sanchez didn't look like he was too keen on carrying on. He didn't look...
I don't know if he's like just worried about these... you know what happened with like Clayton and Pedersen, and you know, with the injuries.
don't want to speak up just in case.
But you know, fair play to him for digging in and just going, getting back out there. But it was clear from pretty early on that he wasn't going to be fit enough to play. I can understand putting value on there. We've spoken about
playing
on that right side. Yeah. You know, actually, it should. He'd obviously come on there, but he looked lost. He just looked lost. He didn't seem to know what he was doing, which is quite concerning considering he's been with us for a few weeks now. But yeah, I didn't get the Roberts and the Duke, bringing on Duke, but just, I mean, I'm not a massive advocate of 4-4-2, but if we're chasing the game, why does it really matter? Why do we need to have five at the back? That is the thing that does piss me off. Yeah. Like, the other subs weren't that much of an issue. What's the point of playing Duke and Hogan together if you haven't really got any quality supply going into them? It just, we've spoken about this before, and we might as well just make a fucking template and then play it back every podcast until he stops fucking doing it or he leaves, because it's doing my head in.
Yeah. It does seem, so a lot of people have said that you can't keep blaming the manager for substitutions. But from my point of view, this isn't something where, you know, we've lost the game and it wasn't one-off on substitutions. This is something that's happening time and time again. The game management just doesn't seem to be there, or it's negative game management to try and get back into it. Rather than even so, going to the Sheffield Wednesday game, for me, you're up against 10 men. You've got no reason. Once you've scored, you've made. To be fair to him, he made a good change after they'd lost the man. He made a good change to bring Halilovic on.
Yep,
he made the right change there. He's pushed forward. As soon as he's got the goal, it's almost like they've gone, right, we need to defend this now. Instead of...
Well, there was a few,
made a few attacking changes, but 10 men, just...
There was a few minutes. I think a lot of people get stuck up on, hung up on the 10 men thing. Sometimes it does make a real difference. Other times, actually... It doesn't at all. And sometimes it has like the opposite effect and teams actually play better.
Yeah.
That was evident to me. And I think I mentioned this on a message board. I didn't watch the game live because of my eldest daughter's birthday. So I ended up like, God knows why I would do this. Well, he wouldn't, because he's not real. But I paid £10 to watch the game back later in the evening when everybody else had gone to bed. And I sat there and watched it about like 9:30 at night or something it was. After all the kids had gone to sleep and stuff like that. Why? I don't know why I would do something like that, but obviously did. I think if we lost, I probably wouldn't have bothered. But I think because we won, I wanted to go back and watch it. Now, it's evident to me that during that second half, there started to be, I don't know if it's a little bit of doubt or belief in the players. We've spoken about this before, where, okay, they're 1-0 up and they actually looked pretty comfortable. Sheffield Wednesday weren't creating too much. But there started to be a little bit of panic in that second half for whatever reason.
I saw you mention this.
And then he made the subs to try and shore up the back line a bit. And, you know, I think ultimately it did work. It can be seen as negative, but we are where we are at the moment. And, you know, if we're stuck with it and they'd equalised, people would only have moaned and say, would only have moaned and said, why didn't he shut up shop? Why didn't you put an extra person at the back? I don't think
we're good enough to do that, though. I don't think we, you know, yeah, obviously we've held on, but to me, we didn't look particularly strong at the back. I mean, they still had that great chance, the Jordan Rhodes header. That all the players that we had back there, and there's still an opportunity like that created. That to me says that we're not really good enough to do that.
And then on the flip side, okay, I take that on board. On the flip side, a lot of people said that it was negative and that, you know, but I think we created probably two or three fairly decent chances in that, with that five at the back as well. Like, chances are, you know, on another day, we don't score a lot of goals. Okay. That's clear, but we are creating a lot more now. I say a lot more. There's not a lot to base it on, is there? But from previous, but I think that's quite key as well. I think people forget that they can look past the fact that we've created a few chances in that formation, that setup. Okay, yes, it's maybe a little bit negative, but I was okay with doing that because we were up, we were fairly comfortable, but the players were starting to panic. And what else are you going to do? You keep it the same, or do you go more attacking and leave yourself more open, or do you try and shut up shop a little bit? Okay, you're saying you don't think we're good enough to do that. That might be the case, but you know, I can see the thinking behind it. And you know, he has pissed me off a lot lately. You know how quickly I change from backing him to just wanting him to go, but I can understand the reasoning behind that when it's essentially a six pointer.
I can see it. I don't like it, and I can't.
I don't think we have to like it though, do we? I think we can accept it if we're grinding out results, which is what I've said previously.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not convinced. It's not something that I can get behind, and I see it as negative, and that's, you know, that's where me and him will probably differ. But I see, from my point of view, I think that Karanka's the type of guy that if we get a one goal lead, then we're not going to try and get any more. We're going to try and see that out.
It would be really nice for us just to have a two goal lead for once and then do it. You know, I don't know if there's, do they ever think about that? Do they ever think about going two goals up? Or maybe we just don't create enough. I don't know. I think the thing we need to take
he has nightmares about a two goal lead.
About going two yeah. goals up, yeah. yeah.
Can't do that.
I think we said at the start of the podcast that there are enough positives across those two games for us to have some belief that we'll pull ourselves out of it. Definitely.
I just think From a player's perspective as well, I think the first, what was it, hour or so, I think they take massive positives from that, and then they come to that point where he makes the changes, and I just think they've got to look over at the touchline and just think, no, we're in the game, don't do this. And I just think that must be demotivating.
Potentially. I think with the subs thing as well, and we kind of touched on this earlier about, you know, bringing McGree or Halilovic on. I think there's a level of trust there that he has or hasn't got in some of these players. Obviously, he mentioned
he said that, hasn't he,
as well, where he kind of threw him under the bus, which I don't...
That's not going to give him any confidence, is it?
I don't really get that, but I think the kid was low on confidence anyway, which we've seen. He's getting pelters from our fans at the moment about it as well. There's been some pretty nasty comments online about him, which I think, you know, are pretty out of order for a kid that, you know, is pretty young. Okay, we spent money on him recently, but he still kept making his way back from a really nasty injury, and he's come into a team that currently aren't performing well. You look at what he did. Currently, just aren't performing well. But then he was in a team that weren't performing that well last season at Charlton and scored a number of goals and had a number of assists. But he was probably given a little bit more freedom to go out and do what he wanted. I think he was played through the middle quite a lot there as well, to be fair. Was like a second striker. The comments that Karanka's made about him midweek are not going to help him with his with his confidence, especially given like how glowing he seemed to talk about him when they first signed him. Now he's got him in and he's really struggled. He's struggled of late and he's just, is it like being cruel to be kind? Is it some form of, I don't think he's that sort of kid.
Reverse psychology type thing. I don't think he is. I don't think that criticising him in public.
I think he needs an arm around him. I think he needs some of that sort of man management where just like, to really give him belief.
Yeah.
And I just don't...
He doesn't seem the type who's going to get fired up by something that you're saying in the press, slating him. He's not the type to turn it around because of that.
It's very weird how he comes out with stuff like that sometimes, like the Dan Crowley stuff and the Leeko stuff, and just like how he'll comment on, oh, I saw something that would suggest that there's a little bit of doubt in his mind, or I brought him on two times and we've lost. It's like, well, you've brought on a lot of players and we've lost, mate. So you point that finger wherever you want. But it seems very evident he's only willing to use about three or four players off that bench regularly that he probably trusts for whatever reason.
He sort of made the point as well that with Sanchez and Bella on the pitch, he then doesn't have anyone to bring on wide. He's got three number 10s that he signed in the summer.
He's got three number 10s.
one wide man and Leeko as well.
Right, so Leeko can play wide as well. McGree can play wide. Halilovic can play wide. So he's got Valerie as well now, who obviously he did bring on, who we know can play wide. But he's still moaning about not having another winger. I said to you, I can't remember if you said it on the podcast, but definitely said it like over WhatsApp and stuff, that we probably needed another wide player, another winger in
the January. Can I just say,
in the January
you
window.
Say WhatsApp really weirdly.
WhatsApp?
WhatsApp?
What's up?
Sorry.
Okay, is it going to be another Toro Terrell WhatsApp? WhatsApp again, is it? Yeah. I just say WhatsApp like everyone else.
Sorry, I'll stop your train of thought then.
No, so yeah, you have. I just maybe should have gone out and bought another winger in the winter window. Then if he's they brought Valerie in, but I think that's transfer's a little bit weird for me. I think something else has gone on there. Whether or not it's Dong was going to get him on the cheap or something, or
it's not the first weird one though, is it?
It's not. there's many of them. There are many of them, but. We probably should have looked to bring in another wide player because you can't. We heavily rely, as proven by Blues breakdown during the week after I've always forget his surname. Jabiri, is it? It was asking about how many goals have we scored or not scored with Bella and Sanchez in the team.
Siri calls it Jabari.
Jabari. We don't score very many goals anyway, but without them, we score even less. So we really need some more creative players on the pitch, or wide players that can come on and replace them effectively. Because at the moment, you know, they both struggle to last those 90 minutes.
Hey, I'm Judah Ball. This is my debut single There With You on the We Are Birmingham podcast. Enjoy.
She tells me she still loves me. I wish that she wasn't lying. All the calls and all the words she would say to keep me hiding. But oh, how she still takes my breath away. I still think she's lovely. Even after all the things that we said, all the regret in my mind. She still takes my breath away. I wanna be there with you. We can talk, we can laugh, but I know that it won't last. I wanna be under the sun, having fun, but I know that that was in the past. I want her to be happy. All the pieces of my heart have fallen to. But oh, how she wants to take my breath away.
So, talking about the wide men, something that I've noticed over the last couple of games that seems to be the case is that our better chances, our better opportunities, and I mentioned this to you at the weekend, I think, as well, are that their starting point seems to be a bit higher up the pitch in the moments that we create opportunities. So when they receive the ball more advanced into the opposition half, we tend to create these opportunities. When they're having to start much deeper and carry the ball much further, we seem much less effective on the attack. Now, I know Ben at Blues Breakdown had a little look, and I think that it showed that the heat maps are still around the halfway line, but that if they've actually pushed on slightly and it's created those little opportunities. So there was Sheffield Wednesday, we had a few, the Gary Gardner one that he pulled back for Sunic, that came from a starting higher position. The goal came from Bella's shot. It was a shot.
Definitely.
100% yeah. A shot. He tried to do the fucking same against Norwich as well.
You could tell with the motion of his legs as well.
100% like, a shot.
Yeah, definitely not a cross, but you know.
The opportunities are coming from a higher starting position, and at times, now they're obviously playing this 4-5-1 or 4-1-4-1.
4-1-4-1, I think
that's it, that then adapts into a 4-3-3 in dynamic. But when they're allowed to start a little bit higher when we've got the ball, it's going to create those opportunities. And that doesn't surprise me that over the last few games that we've seen Blues, maybe not clear-cut chances in all situations, but more chances in general, even half chances, just in and around the box.
I think you spot on with the observation, and there's another thing has been pretty key of late, and we've already mentioned before, but the pressing higher up the pitch where there's two, the 4-1-4-1 works pretty well because of Sunic and Gardner. Sunic is whatever reason, he's completely lost his way of any technical ability he ever had. Like he's completely drilled out of him.
So early on, he looked absolutely fantastic.
And very comfortable, looking for the ball, pinging the ball around, you know, completing nice, simple passes, cabin shots on target.
Blues ruining players, who'd have thought it?
Yeah. Bring in a £6 million midfielder and turn him into a 60 grand midfielder. It's pretty, like... Yeah, come in like Perlo, go out looking like Ollie Lee, I think was probably a fair assessment. But I feel really sorry for him because we've just kind of drilled out any class he probably had. But what he is good at, he's obviously got a lot of energy. And having, similar to Gardner, you've got them two pressing and we seem to be winning the ball back a little bit more often, picking up those second balls, which I noticed a lot against Norwich as well, like, so many times in the past, we will not pick up the second ball. We'll always be like second best. But more recently, we seem to be winning those it's what we do with it afterwards that seems to when things start to break down. So, again, I mean, there are signs that things are improving there, but you're quite right with terms of like the where the chances are sort of coming from. But there are baby steps again of us looking like we're moving forward, and I don't want to get too positive about it because we'll just shoot ourselves in the foot, no doubt.
You can't build yourself up too much, can you? Because
well, no, I mean, I said to I did a little thing with a lot for words, a QPR fan site a couple of days ago, the regular thing that I do, and that'll be out tomorrow, Saturday, no doubt. Whereas like every time we look like we're moving forward and we have a couple of good results or things look like they're moving in the right direction, we just end up taking two steps back again. And it's just been almost feels like it's been a constant cycle of that, it like since 2011 in general, but like yeah, actually with Karanka, every time you think he's got it nailed down, he screws us over with something, or a player makes a fucking mistake, or you know, Efridge drops a corner into the net, or you know, just it's very, very frustrating is the word, I think, because there are signs that it will work, and then
there are absolutely signs that we shouldn't be in the situation that we are at the moment.
100%.
Every week people say these players aren't good enough. Now, that
bollocks.
So that first half against Norwich says to me these players are good enough. There's no doubt there. I'll tell you what's a big worry for me, and I mentioned it at the time when we sold Kieftenbeld, and I said if anything happens to those players, and I think I said it on a podcast as well, we've got Sonjic is obviously at some point going to get his suspension. There's injuries to deal with for the rest of the season. We're now playing three centre midfielders.
Yeah.
So we've got even less durability there in terms of players, because now our backup is San Jose and the backup to that is Clayton. So yeah, now we're even in an even worse position. And that was just to clear some wages off. I think that's a massive bollock that we've dropped.
It's a shame he hadn't worked out that 4-1-4-1 before they decided to let Kieftenbeld go, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you think that it would have made a difference? For me, he had his sights purely on getting him out anyway.
I mean, it may not have been him that wanted him out as such. It may have been a club decision. But you know, obviously, he said at the beginning of the season that
you can leave.
That he knew where he stood, but he worked really hard anyway.
Yeah.
We could do with someone else in there. It's got a little bit more energy. Obviously the slim pickings beyond San Jose and Clayton. Obviously we've got Kalen Boyd-Munster should be back from injury fairly soon, but it's going to take him a while to get back at the intensity of the game. And I would like to think that, you know, what with his ability and energy, that he might be given a chance in there as well, because that might be seen as a little bit more positive than bringing on the old timers that can't move, both of them.
I said San Jose purely because Clayton just doesn't seem as if he's...
Well, I mean, it's fairly obvious that they're both signing up for fucking walking football next season, isn't it? I think, you know, and even then, I think they're going to fucking struggle. So I feel sorry for them, to be honest. It's not their fault.
I feel really sorry for San Jose. And you can tell, it's not like he's not bothered. Once he missed that header the other night, he then sprinted near enough the length of the pitch. I say a sprint in his terms. It wasn't, but he tried to get back. He knew that he'd fucked up, and he wasn't happy about it. He didn't just turn around and watch it. But I think there is a massive element of his brain can do it, but his legs can't.
Yeah, I think, but that's where you've got, where you have some players that just, that's why he's probably better when he's being played at centre back. So a bit like he can read the game from deeper, I think, a lot better. I remember when, this is going back a long time, when Steve Bruce, when Terry Francis brought Steve Bruce in, Steve Bruce had zero pace. But how many times was he beaten? Very, very rarely. Yeah. Like he was always in the right
Kenny
position.
Kenny Cunningham was another one as well.
As he's playing deeper, you know, I think he reads the game fairly well. That's probably why he did play better as a centre back. He's not quite as effective in midfield for whatever reasons. But again, like the guy, when you look at him and he gets his foot on the ball and he's got time and space to play passes and like ping the ball out wide, he looks like a really, really good footballer. I think it was the Preston game where we really saw, where we think we beat them, was it 2-1 or 3-1? I can't remember in that game.
Yeah, the Preston one was brilliant. The QPR one was the first one where he hit that pass out to the near enough to the corner flag. Absolutely.
Yeah, they were back. Those games were back-to-back, weren't they, I think, were they?
Yeah, I think.
Very similar, close period of time.
He looked fantastic then, but at the moment, I don't know if it's a confidence thing, whether he's just completely done with confidence, but he doesn't even look the same player with the ball.
He doesn't. And it's going back to the thing we were talking about with Sonjic. We're just drilling out the quality from these players, one way or another, but I mean, we'll drain it out of you.
How it seems, isn't it? When was the last time that we had a quality player, Jude aside? I mean, we tried our hardest there, I think. But when was the last time that we had a player that we could actually say, we've signed a good player and we got to see him playing well? It's been a while.
Probably Carlos Costly.
Yeah. That turn, the costly
Luciano turn. Luciano Figueroa. No, I mean, recent times, we're probably looking at very recent Sanchez and Bella, but even then.
We're not seeing the best out of them, though.
We're not seeing the best out of them, but also, there was kind of, they're still a bit of an unknown quantity, weren't they, as well, at the time. So it's kind of difficult to actually say that they came with a load of hype because they were pretty much not very well known.
I just don't think, even with those players, even with what they can do, Halilovic as well, and I just don't think that we're setting up the way that we can see the best out of them. And to be I can't remember the last time that we played in a way that would get the best out of exciting players. It's probably Dugarry.
Is that harsh? I don't know. I think that's going back quite far. That's going back really far, isn't it? I'm not sure if that. I think more recent. I don't think any amazing players or great players we've signed in recent years is, again, pretty slim, isn't it? It's quite a depressing thought, actually. We've had our little bit of excitement around people like Crowley coming in and about Bella Sanchez and
And then out.
Yeah,
exactly. Passing visits.
And Dan Crowley, he's not really doing very much at Hull either. You know, he's gone just a bit of a sort of a tangent here, but he was started off on the bench and he had a few games, and they didn't. I don't know how well they played particularly, but he's playing out wide there. He's not playing. He's not playing as a number 10. He's not playing as a central midfielder. And ultimately, I think they went on a run where they dropped a few points and he's back on the bench again. So he's struggling to get into that team as well. So, you know, maybe for whatever reason, our previous managers made a decision not to play him. You know, they were actually right to do that. I don't know. So that's a bit of a tangent. But you're right. It's a lack of real quality players that we've had come in that, you know, have made a real impact and been allowed to play. You'd like to think Halilovic is probably one that on paper or, you know, history.
But you look at him when he receives the ball and it's like, oh, he looks good on the ball. But then everyone just sort of stands there and watches him. It's like, help him out. He can't do it all on his own.
Yeah, this kid has been used to playing with people like Lionel Messi. And then he's like needing to thread a ball through to Lukas Djukovic. No disrespect to Duke. You know, he's been in the same team as Busquets and he looks to the left and oh, look, there's Gary Gardner. You know, there's a slight difference there, you know. But
yeah. I don't know. I don't. one day, even going back to, now I know you wanted to talk about it, going back to the cup win 10 years ago.
10 whole years ago.
If you go back to that team, we had Barry Ferguson and Lee Bowyer in midfield. So it wasn't even then like you had a creative, you had dynamic midfielders or a midfielder.
Well, you had Gardner. Midfielders that could, you got the energy of Bowyer, you've got, you know, the actual, like, just the competency on the, comfortable on the ball, ball retention, technical ability of Barry Ferguson. You know, you had, there was, that was just, yeah, we're not too far off having a similar sort of thing with, you know, with Gary Gardner and Harper and Sonjic now, really. It's just, obviously, it's vastly different levels there. But yeah, I don't know. It's quite a depressing thought, isn't it, really? If you really wanted to sink your teeth into it.
Yeah. 10 years.
10 years. So we talk about that, I suppose, yeah. Since it's coming up for 10 years this weekend.
Yeah.
Lots happened since then, eh?
Just a bit.
Europe. Relegated. A European.
Relegation. Journey. European tour.
Nearly relegation, then, nearly relegation, nearly relegation, nearly relegation.
Safe. Nearly relegation.
It's been a. It's been a very. You had the playoffs, didn't we, with Verhooten, then he left, and it's just gradually just slipped further and further down the league, closer and closer to trouble. Which, again, is very depressing. Now, you're right. You mentioned that I wanted to talk about it a little bit. But for me, this is the last, absolutely the last year that I never used the Obafemi Martins Day or Obafemi Day anyway. But this is absolutely the last year we can continue to celebrate this cup win. I know it's a big thing in our history because we have very little history.
Do you not think, though, while we're the last Midlands club to win a trophy, that we can still say that we're the last Midlands club to win a trophy?
I think we can still say that. I wouldn't go on about it all the time, because we're risking sounding a lot like
historians.
The historians down the road,
yeah.
Like, they, you know, they always refer to the glory days or the European Cup, et cetera,
And to be fair, if you go on about it too much, sooner or later, one of the clubs that are in the Premier League are going to get into a cup final and win it, and it's going to be all backfiring in your face.
Exactly. Like that's one of the best days of my life. Like, it's always going to have that. It's always going to be a day I look back on. I wouldn't change what's happened since. I wouldn't swap it to stay in the Premier League or to, you know, yo-yo up and down. Dave Jackson, who you know, who does a little bit of editing and stuff for the We Are Birmingham videos, asked me earlier on, would I swap it? I wouldn't. Absolutely would not swap it. It was a great day, just a great feeling. Won some money as well. I think I mentioned that to you before.
It sort of goes in with the same thing, doesn't it? It's like the teams that, you want to finish 10th in the Premier League and progress. It's like, I'd much rather finish 18th or 19th and get relegated and take that cup, because that day out, the whole thing about winning the trophy, that's there in your history forever.
And what followed it, the European tour was amazing.
Yep.
Like that, the day
nearly
the
dying in Bruges
was just like that. That was incredible. Even talking about it now, it's just give me shivers. That day was awesome.
Because window behind you is open.
It's like I closed it for this, because just in case the ice cream van turns up. The kids are loud enough as they are outside the door, but. The Bruges was just like, in some ways, I almost found that was more a more memorable thing than the cup final, because I think we went to Bruges and everyone expected us to get pumped, a bit like the cup final in that respect. Don't think an English club had ever won in Bruges before. I think we were the first club to do that, if I remember correctly. I need to double check that, but I'm pretty sure that was the case at the time. It's since changed. I think I've seen Liverpool and then Man United have beaten 4-0 a few seasons ago.
We knocked the confidence out of them. That's what it was.
This is it, yeah. So we laid the groundwork for teams like Liverpool and Man United to go.
You're welcome.
yeah. Thanks so much. I wouldn't give up those experiences for anything. Am I upset with how things have gone at the club ever since? Oh, absolutely. We can't have nice things because we're Birmingham City. So we just have to deal with it. But that cup win will never go, or will never leave my memory. Well, it might do at some point. But that's when I've really fucking lost it, which sometimes I feel like could happen on the regular at the moment. But I think it's time that we kind of almost put it to bed in terms of shouting about it on social media and going a bit wilder.
Celebrating.
Yeah, I'm sure like the club will put some out on, and I would expect the club to put some out on Saturday about it. I'd expect them to do a little bit of a, you know, just some form of montage or anything like that I would do. I think it's important that we don't let fans forget it in that respect, but we need to just chill out a little bit with it.
Do you think it should go then every 5 years or every 10 years or something that we mention it? Or do you think never?
I think it's from there on in, it's probably 5 years, I think, is a nice benchmark. It's like,
it's 15
when I turn
years,
my volume up on my TV, it has to be in multiples of fives.
Yeah. So like, do you do twos as well? Do you do fives and twos?
No.
I can't have the individual ones, but it has to be like on a 12 or 15 or 10.
Yeah. So yeah, you can do even numbers and fives, but you can't do odds. Yeah. I was going to my daughter's room, and when they're watching TV, if they're watching TV at night, I'm like, oh, you can't have it on 11. You have to turn it down or turn it up. But normally down, because they watch absolute rubbish and I can't be doing that in the background. Yeah. So I think it's time to put that to bed. There's a couple of articles out today.
Media.
I don't know if anyone would have seen it yet. So there's one on Sky Sports.
Media Hawk.
I mean, well, it's not. I'm not the media. Who am I?
What have you been on Sky Sports today? You're on
Sky.
You were speaking to QPR.
Last week. Yeah, that's it.
And now you're on your podcast today.
Now I'm on podcast. Yeah, Talksport haven't rang me in a while. That's disappointing. But our friend Daniel Ivory is obviously been doing the rounds as well himself. But yeah, there's a good article here on Sky Sports at the moment, which sort of breaks down what's happened since the cup win. Interviews with ex-players, managers, Panos Pavlakis is on there, a bit of Daniel Ivory, it's a little bit with me at the end. I did about 15 minutes interview with him, and I think they used about 10 words. I don't even remember saying them, to be honest. And Greg Evans of The Athletic has put some out as well in kind of the same vein in terms of just where has it all gone wrong in the past 10 years.
To be fair, mate, you said that Sky Sports have cut your 15 minutes down to that. Think of this podcast goes on for 3 hours and I have to cut it down to cut you out of it that much so we can actually get in a
That's room. A lot of the time it's just my kids talking in the background and my dog chewing his foot though, isn't it? It's a lot of editing to go in for that. But you know, one thing I will say about those things is depressing as they are to read, and I've used the word depressing quite a lot today, I think, is that it's being highlighted by mainstream media again.
Yep.
There's a little bit on Talksport last week where
Dance
had put something together. Tom Ross had been on there, and again, I think Daniel had a little bit on there also. It's really, really good that we're getting this sort of exposure on the club. Is it going to do any good? I don't know, but it can't make things any worse than they currently are. as depressing as it is.
10 years. 10 years, it's done.
It's done. Let's
In 5 years' time, put out a tweet and say, on this day 15 years ago. In 10 years' time, put out a tweet and say, on this day 20 years ago.
This is it, yeah. This is it. This is, we're closing it off now. We'll never forget it, but it is time to stop going on about it.
If you enjoy our podcast, please don't forget to share it on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Let people know that you're enjoying it.
And also don't forget to rate and review us on all podcast platforms.
If they allow it.
If they allow it.
Cheers, guys.
Now, before we get into looking ahead to QPR and Huddersfield and our predictions, just want to give
a quick shout. You didn't need reminding about that game then, did you? You knew what was coming up.
Yeah, definitely knew. One thing I didn't need reminding about is I just wanted to give a shout out to Emelec, who won 4-1 last Sunday in their first game of the season.
They're top.
I think they probably are top, I think.
Goal difference.
They are top on goal difference after one game. Yeah.
Up the Emelec.
Nosebleed territory for me, Chris. Loving life.
One successful team in your life.
Away to Orcas. I'll probably pronounce that incorrectly. I'm sure somebody will correct me on that.
Go talk about that on your Emelec podcast.
Not I'm still on this setting one. It up, mate. Yeah, been pretty difficult to find an Emelec supporter in Coleraine or anywhere else in the UK, to be fair.
So when lockdown ends, you'll be sat in a bar and I'll be out watching Emelec games.
Out on my table selling lemonade, asking people if they want to support Emelec. So, yeah, when the sun comes up. So QPR, a game that obviously you're aware that I was like going to home and away. Friends, QPR fans, normally meet up with them, have a few beers.
Good away day in London, isn't it?
That's always good. Obviously, this is a home game.
At the moment,
it's a home game, isn't it? Yeah.
Makes no difference.
It makes a difference
playing,
to us, no.
You're playing on a different pitch.
Playing on a pile of rubble. That was pretty shocking, isn't it? That's one thing we had mentioned already. That is horrible.
I mean, I think we have mentioned it in the past, but I saw a Norwich fan actually who tweeted the other night and said, didn't think the pitch could get any worse after the game the other night. It fucking is.
Of course, because they obviously played Cov, didn't they?
Yeah.
Which, you know, that was actually quite a depressing stat as well. Depressing, I've used it again.
This podcast is depressing.
It is, yeah. Why do you listen to it, guys? I think even the commentator mentioned it, that in the past week, or the past like 10 days, Norwich have won as many times at St Andrews as Blues have in the last 12 months. That is a depressing stat. How do you feel about that one? Did you hear that when you were watching it? I don't know if I imagined it, but I'm pretty sure it's true, obviously, with it.
I think there's probably a number of teams that have won at St Andrews more than we have in the last two seasons.
I don't know. Maybe. But certainly like in the last week.
Last two seasons. Since lockdown.
It's horrific. The home form and the pitch, which resembles the home form. There you go. So QPR. As Chris's head hits the microphone.
QPR. Have you got an insight for us on QPR?
Well, this is the thing. So QPR obviously like to play football, don't they? It's Mark Warburton.
Say that weird as well.
Warburton.
Warburton.
That's his name, Mark Warburton.
Warburton. Weirdo.
They like to play football.
Who's the manager?
His name's Mark. He used to manage Brentford and Nottingham Forest.
Warburton.
I'm not saying Warburton because it's Warburton.
You can say it. All right, carry on.
I can, but I'm not going to because it's Warburton.
Why are we just rambling? Let's get on with it.
Probably just trying to keep the wolf in the door with another unfortunate prediction. That said, I saw enough in those last two games to suggest that we will get something on Saturday, I think. We play the way we did against Norwich. We already touched on it. And I think we'll come away with a result. Now, they leave themselves fairly exposed at the back sometimes. And I think we'll be able to capitalise on that in terms of creating opportunities. It's just whether we can put those opportunities away. But we're never going to be in a high-scoring game. Well, we are if the opposition starts going a barrel full. But I feel pretty confident that we will go there. We're at home. That we will
go into the game.
Win. Yeah, we'll go into the game. It's got to be a similar game plan. He can't change it. This is my caveat. If he keeps the same,
do you change any of the personnel? Because
no, I keep that start.
Yeah.
You've got to keep that starting 11. You've got to keep that. That is the team that should be starting every game, injury permitting, going forwards. Got to be.
We didn't mention it earlier in the podcast, but I think even the defensive pairing is looking good, looking more solid. I know that they had three put past them by Norwich, but
I think you can discount the third goal anyway because we were on the attack and we were left exposed to bounce the ball with San Jose.
Big element of luck with the second one with the deflection. So, but
it wasn't a 3-1 game.
No, they defended well.
I'm more than happy with that back four. Keep it as it is. You know what I'm like with Pedersen, but Pedersen has proven the past couple of games that he is back to somewhere near his best again. Probably reading that open letter. He seemed to really like that, didn't he? So it's obviously done something for him. The end of the Harley. That's the other thing as well. The Harley Dean. We didn't see the video that he put together with all the messages from family members for the players. But I wonder if that's played a little part in motivation and just making them. You know, not saying they weren't trying because we've had this conversation before, but just a little bit more desire and energy, a little bit more belief, maybe.
I don't think it's a coincidence that we're playing better with a team that we probably suggested would be our best team from the players that we've got.
Yeah, and fairly settled, keeping it settled as well.
Yeah, which was obviously okay, not fiddling around with it.
I don't want to see him mess about with it anymore. I think that he's got to stick with it. He's got to stick with it. I'll be pissed if he doesn't. Unless we've got an injury, I'll be really annoyed that he doesn't stick with it.
How did QPR play with the ball? Have you heard much on that? Do they like keeping it around the back? Because they obviously like to play football, but do they try and get it forward a bit quicker? Or
they basically just play themselves through the thirds. I think they were susceptible to mistakes at the back quite a lot as well, I think, early part of the season. I think that is less of the case now, but they're still leaving themselves a little bit exposed and a little bit open.
Is that more on a counter-attack, or do you think that the high press could come into play there as well?
I definitely think the high press can come into that. Absolutely think they can. If they're going to... Because all Mark Warburton's teams have appear to do the same sort of thing. Piss off. I think that we can capitalise on something or create stuff from winning the ball in the final third. You know, a bit like when... it's a bit like we used to play with... when we had Gary Rowett in charge and you'd have, you know, Magoma pressing in that final third and winning the ball really high up the pitch or just looking to pounce on a loose ball and then we break away. I think there's plenty of opportunity there against not just QPR, but just a lot of teams in general. If we can have the same energy levels that we've had the last few games against QPR, I think we can come out with something. I'm probably giving people a false sense of hope or actually thinking he's talking bollocks again, we're getting pumped. There's probably a fine line there.
The thing is, they've had a good run of results as well.
They absolutely have, yeah.
So they've beaten, in recent weeks, they've beaten Watford, they've beaten Blackburn, Brentford and Bournemouth, and then drew to Preston last time out. So, I mean, the teams that are in there, you know, they're well, they do us over, don't they? So,
yeah, I mean, they were, who doesn't? I think, by the sounds of stuff that I read about the Preston game, they were very much second best for the most part of that, and probably should have lost that. Doesn't mean a lot in the grand scheme of things. They still came away with a point, which would be nice if we would do something like that as well. You know, I don't know why I feel weirdly confident about going into this game and getting something. I just do. In fact, I think we could. I know we're not going to do the prediction on the Huddersfield game today as well, but I think we'll get something from both of these games. 4 points, I think, is a definite possibility.
And so on that point, then, predictions. What are you going to put on your prediction league post?
I normally what I say on here and what I do put on there are two different things.
You've got to use the same one, surely.
No, because I think I actually put, I think I said 3-0, didn't I, for Norwich on the podcast. And then I ended up putting 1-1 on the actual prediction league. But I hadn't been on there all week. I'd been really busy at home, so I never really got a chance to do anything. So I went on last minute and I'd actually forgotten about the prediction. But I'm going to go on here, 2-1. Lose, I think.
See, I don't share your confidence, and I'm going to go 2-1 QPR.
That's fair. It could go one of two ways, Chris.
Well, it could go three ways.
Or one of three. Yeah. I think they could. I think they could definitely open us up. I think they've got the ability to do that. And
fucking open you up,
Charlie Austin has a. I'm pretty sure. He scored a few against us in the past as well. He definitely scored against us when we played West Brom, didn't he? Did he score two in that game? Well, he came on to sub, didn't he?
One.
Just looked different kettle of fish.
I can't remember if he got that. He got two.
He concerns me. But, you know, they've got some good players. They play nice football. But I think, you know, we can probably get the pitch as well. You know, I think Norwich struggled to play football on that during the week. And I wouldn't say that, I definitely wouldn't say that QPR have the same killer instinct that Norwich do. And they're probably not as good at the back either.
I hope you're right. I hope that the positivity does pull through.
I don't know why I'm feeling so positive about it, Chris. I mentioned the word depressing about 47 times in this thing, but for some reason I'm positive about this game on Saturday.
Well,
I don't know.
I love it, mate. I'll take it. I've gone 2-1 QPR, but
I've got a bit
of positivity because you said that we're going to win. So. I'm trusting you.
If I can fill one person with a little bit of positivity every day.
Mate, if we do lose, it's all on you.
I'm not making the subs.
Right. Until next week, enjoy the games, hopefully, because there's a bit more to enjoy now. We're actually in the games. And
yes.
We'll see you next time. Keep right on.
Keep right on.